an update on the push to impeach the president. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead on the show this morning, we speak with Congressman Al Lawson about where the impeachment process goes from here. You can join us. Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, don't miss our ticket giveaway. It's your chance to see Mystery Science Theater 3000 creator Joel Hodgson. Yeah, he's at the Florida Theater this weekend. That and more ahead. But first this hour, the U.S. House of Representatives continues to move forward with its impeachment investigation. At the same time, a federal court ruled Monday that former White House counsel Don McGahn must comply with a House subpoena and testify before a congressional committee. Lawmakers consider McGahn to be an important witness into learning whether President Trump obstructed justice. And the House is also expected to issue a report on the president's dealings with Ukraine sometime after the Thanksgiving break. Will this all end up in articles of impeachment against the president? Well, with the latest on where all of this is going, we welcome back to the show North Florida Congressman Al Lawson in town for the Thanksgiving break. Congressman Lawson, thanks for being with us.
It's a real privilege to be here with you this morning.
And what are your calls and questions for North Florida Congressman, U.S. Representative Al Lawson? The lines are open. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open too. Well, Congressman Lawson, the last time you appeared on this program, the impeachment inquiry was at a different stage. You were just coming around to supporting your colleagues in supporting the inquiry. Now that we've heard from quite a few witnesses who've testified publicly, we've learned a lot about the president's dealings in Ukraine. What's your reaction so far to what those witnesses have testified to?
Well, it's no question that the witnesses that have appeared before the committee, they are very credible, and they really are concerned about the direction the country is going. And it came out pretty clearly that when Congress appropriated the dollars for Ukraine, is that the president wanted to use that situation to get information out, they say dirt, on former Vice President Biden and his son. And so as a result, that was the wrong thing to actually do. Before, people were saying it didn't really happen, but now they know from credible people that it did happen.
It's against the law, to be clear, to extort or bribe or shake down a foreign government to benefit yourself politically here in this country. That said, what would you say to some of your constituents out there who have bought into the narrative that former Vice President Biden and his son Hunter also seem to have acted improperly? Some believe, although to be clear, the only evidence that we have in this is that Hunter Biden was on the board of a Ukrainian energy company at the same time that Joe Biden was vice president.
Well, you know, everyone is aware, even members of Congress, is that that investigation took place some time ago, and they found no improprieties in the investigation. So now you have a couple of members in the Senate who are saying that we want to bring them in and do another investigation. It's not necessary. The investigation will be done by very credible people with the FBI and intelligence. And so as a result, it's really a smokescreen, and sometimes things in Congress goes this way simply due to the fact that it's not in favor of your particular candidate. It's not what is best for, at some points, for the American citizen. It's about what is best for the person that is probably serving in the office. So you hear that over and over and over again, but there's no credibility to that request.
And if you're just tuning in, where do you stand on the impeachment inquiry into President Trump? We're speaking with North Florida Congressman Al Lawson. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. So where are we at now in the process? Where does Intelligence Chair Adam Schiff, who's been leading this inquiry, where does he take things from here?
Well, I think at this point, there might be the possibility of some other witnesses that they would bring in for questioning, but at this point, I don't think they really have to. They have all the information that they really need. It'll be presented then to Judiciary, and then Judiciary will decide to move it forward to the House floor, and there'll be considerable amount of debate there And then it would be called for the vote. And it was supposed to maybe take place before Thanksgiving, but that's not going to happen. But shortly after Thanksgiving, we have been told don't plan to go home for early for Christmas, due to the fact that this issue is going to come up.
Where would you stand on voting up or down on articles of impeachment against this president?
Well, you know, we are brief, both Democrats and Republicans, in intelligence. And we all hear the same thing. You know, when we walk out of those meetings, you know, sometimes people take a different view simply because it's political. From what I've heard and from what I've seen and all the credible candidates, I would vote to move it forward.
You would vote to impeach?
And to impeach.
Okay. Let me ask you your reaction to your colleague in the House who also represents this area, Representative John Rutherford, Republican of Jacksonville, former sheriff. On November 15th, he tweeted out, "Here's one thing to keep in mind when deciding what constitutes an impeachable offense. Placing a hold on foreign assistance is entirely legal and under the authority of the president and his national security team. Are we supposed to impeach real Donald Trump for doing his job?" Your response.
Well, you know, John is a good friend, and I spent an awful lot of time with him, but we differ on this issue because no one is above the law. And the Constitution is more important than any party or anything else that our forefathers left here for us. But it is clearly stated that you cannot do this. People have been taking different spins because of the political nature of it in the 2020 campaign coming up. If this has been President Obama, you would have a different reaction from my Republican colleagues, you know. And so what has happened is this president has been unusual and unorthodox. And so as a result, it's not only causing my Republican colleagues problems when I talk to them off the record, but it's causing problems all over the country because people get mixed emotion. They think you're doing the wrong thing. But what I ask people to think about is think about when Congress appropriate dollars, $400 million or so, to help defend for the Ukraine to defend themselves against the Russian, there's no reason that that should be negotiated because that put America in a vulnerable, in a bad position.
And what we learned during the process over these last weeks is, according to the career civil servants who testified, and also EU Ambassador Gordon Sondland, that there was, in fact, a quid pro quo, a shakedown, if you will, the president of Ukraine being told either say you're going to launch, publicly say you're going to launch an investigation into the Bidens, or we will withhold military aid that you need to defend yourself against Russia, which is becoming ever more aggressive in Ukraine. Ukraine is a country that's trying to shake off the corruption of the Russian mobsters and oligarchs that it has typically suffered under. And so what we learned from EU Ambassador Sondland was that the Ukrainian president wasn't told he actually had to do an investigation into the Bidens. He just had to publicly say he was going to do an investigation into the Bidens, theoretically, to help President Trump politically, right?
There's no question about it. And so as a result, if you look at the different spins on it, some people who testified have had the opportunity to come back again. They really changed their position and say, you know, we need to tell the truth. And that's what has happened. When you have career diplomats that is only concerned about the security of this country tell you that what really happened, it puts people in an unusual position. It is a uniform force in some of the senators to say, you know, well, this shouldn't have happened, but we don't think it's impeachable. And so that could not happen. The Senate might not want to take it up, but I think they're going to have the hearing and do the investigation. So probably most likely this will may extend into 2020.
And as we watch this play out, a moment ago you said that you speak to your Republican colleagues in the House off the record. And what do they tell you off the record?
Well, they are really not satisfied with what is happening in D.C., especially with the president. But they feel obligated because the president has called a lot of them in and said, I need you all to stand fast, to stick with us. Nothing really happened. This is about your election, too, not only about my election, but your election in 2020. And many of you might not return. And so as a result, it's been a major lockdown, more so than anything else. And then you see some signs in the GOP where people are beginning to acknowledge that certain things did happen because, you know, even when it come down to election, you don't want to put Ukraine and say that Ukraine also had a an interfere with our election when you know for a fact that Russia, you know, has been proven and everyone knows it. Even on the Republican side, they say we need to make sure Russia doesn't do this again. You know, Russia has been participating and trying to push America election the way that they want it to go. So as a result, as your colleagues are going to hear, they don't just represent Republicans, they represent Democrats and independents too. So as a result, you want to list them. And so when you look at all the national polls, you will find that they haven't really changed in the last 2 months. You know, 50% would like him impeached and removed from office, you know, and then about 47 or so percent are saying that, you know, we don't want him removed from office. So the polls haven't changed very much, but the most
country split right down the middle.
Split right down the middle.
As ever, huh? Yeah. Okay, let's go to your calls now for North Florida Congressman Al Lawson. What are your thoughts and questions about the impeachment inquiry in the U.S. House of Representatives? 549-2937. Eric is in Arlington. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
Hey, a couple of points. The problem isn't that the country split right down the middle. The problem is gerrymandering, and I'll explain why. What's happened is that if you end up with a district with say a very high percentage of Republicans in that district, those constituents of that lawmaker are not waiting around and looking for that lawmaker to tell the truth and do the right thing. What they're waiting around and looking for is for them to toe the party line. And so because these districts have become so condensed or packed with either this side or that side, you don't get any pushback at lawmakers when they do the wrong thing, such as blindly support President Trump in this thing. Somebody just said a minute ago that a president, it's legal for a president to withhold aid or withhold aid. That may be true, but it's not legal for a president to withhold aid in order that he receive some sort of pro quo. And finally, how many, you guys happen to know how many people have gone to jail now associated with the Trump administration in 3 short years? Obama had 8 years in office, and I don't think he had a single person associated with his campaigns or his staff or anybody that ever went to jail. But Trump in 3 short years is, I don't know, there must be at least 10 and counting now. So, these things are important. Anyway, I'll take your
thanks, Eric. Yeah. Okay. A lot of points from Eric. To be clear, there have been several dozen criminal indictments and I believe either 5 or 6 criminal convictions tied to the Trump administration so far. But let's get to his other point, Congressman. Gerrymandered districts. Your district is gerrymandered. So is your colleague's John Rutherford. Congressman Rutherford's district is gerrymandered to favor Republicans. Yours is gerrymandered to favor Democrats. What and how do you see that skewing our political discourse?
Well, you know, when this district was, and he makes a very valid point, but when this district was redrawn, it was done by the group called Fair Districts,
right?
And led by former Governor and Senator Bob Graham. And so they wanted to keep the North Florida area together, even though it's Northeast Florida and Northwest Florida. And so as a result, my district still comprises a large percentage of our Republicans. When I was first elected to the legislature back in the Florida legislature back in 1982, I served in a district that was not gerrymandered. You know, it was only about maybe 28-26% African-Americans and everybody else in the district. And so as a result, I was able to win that district because of working hard with people with different views, taking their views and concerns, and letting them know that I work hard for them. But there are a lot of gerrymandered districts in the state of Florida, and you're going to see with reapportionment that a lot of that is slowly beginning to change. The caller is absolutely correct. We have what they call a lot of swing districts. And those people who are in swing district, it's hard for them to make a decision because they're worried that they might not return. And you know what happened today? We should not be worried about whether we're going to return back to Congress. We should be worried about what are we doing for the people that we represent. And that's what is critically important. But all over this country, you see a whole lot of that. And so there are members who are in swing districts, both Democrats and Republicans. They don't know what they're going to do with this vote, even if they are voting the wrong way, simply because they're thinking about the next election in November.
Right. And so how do you think it's a foregone conclusion, though, that the House will vote to send articles of impeachment to the Senate?
I think it would. I mean, this has been going on to the extent where there's a lot of things that need to be done in Congress in terms of lowering prescription drugs, Medicare, Medicaid, protecting Social Security, doing something about the student loan crisis that we have in this country. And so a lot of those things have been kind of put on the back burner. In fact, we have sent maybe 135 bills down to the Senate this past year, and they've only taken up about 6 or 8 of them. Mm-hmm. So as a result, impeachment can kind of paralyze, you know, the political process, even though the leaders are going to say, we're getting a lot of stuff done. We get this done. But it's not really happening right now. All they're doing is talking about impeachment and hearings. People are demonstrating all over there in Washington and different places. And so as a result, I think that they got to either move forward, the leadership, or leave it alone.
Either send the articles to the Senate or let it go.
Or let it go.
What I hear you saying is other important business isn't getting done.
Absolutely.
Okay. Jimmy is downtown. Jimmy, you're on the air.
Thanks, Melissa. Good morning. And good morning, Big Al.
Good morning.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Thank you.
Good morning. Proud to have you as my congressman, as always. I just think that, you know, the tide didn't turn in Watergate until some Republicans actually went to President Nixon and said, you know, it's time to do the right thing because we can't stand by you. I think we would all grow old and die before that happens with the current Republicans that we have, you know, representing us in the city and other places. So I'm worried about that. But what do you think, Congressman, we can do as just Joe paycheck citizens of of the America to help Congress move in the right direction? I mean, should we be calling? Should we write letters? Is there something we can do to help get this impeachment show on the road?
Well, that's a very good question. And one of the things that I think is very important is for you to continue to call us, especially our U.S. senators, Rubio and Scott, and other representatives, to let them know how you feel. Because when you have to make these tough decisions, you have to really think about what you have received. I mean, when I first got back home here in Jacksonville and it's so good to be here, too, from D.C.
You're happy to get out of D.C.
Happy to get out of D.C.
Your colleague John Rutherford said the same thing the last time he was here.
Yeah, so as a result is, I'd like to get out with the constituents and see how they really feel, you know, because I might be influenced by people up there in the leadership, but then it's good to get out among your colleagues and to find out how they feel. I did a...
But let me just push back a little on that. Do you honestly think Rick Scott or Marco Rubio will be swayed on their impeachment vote based on phone calls from constituents? A cynic might say that there's no way the majority of Republican senators in D.C. will vote to remove this president, no matter how many calls they get from their constituents.
Well, they might not change, but they appeal to your conscience. You know, I get people who call and say all kind of things, and you kind of think about it, and you want to call them back, let them express themselves, because, you know, this job really belongs to the people. You know, it's the people, it's taxpayers who really pay us. And so you really need to listen to them. You don't always have to go along with leadership. That's one of the reasons why I was questioned why it took me so long to recommend.
You were one of the very last Democrats in the House to support impeachment. I think you were, if not the deciding one, the deciding number, you were the next one. I mean, you were at the very end of the process, right?
And the reason why I was there, Melissa, is that I wanted to hear from people. And not to say that Nancy Pelosi, anyone told me I had to vote. I wanted to hear from constituents. So by the land, people start calling all over the place and saying, what's going on with you? And I said, nothing going on with me. I just want to know how you all feel.
Okay. Jessica in Mandarin. Go ahead, Jessica.
Hi. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yep. Go ahead.
So I wondered if the congressman has heard of the possibility of whether or not any other issues will be added to the articles of impeachment. It seems like there is so much well-reported, documented evidence of violations of the Emoluments Clause, Trump's recent verdict that came down of his charity mishandling funds. So it seems to me that the Russia issue and the Ukraine issue are, you know, a mere microcosm of this bigger track record of corruption. And I'm wondering if the congressman has heard about whether or not any of those issues would come to light. And I'd encourage all of your listeners to listen to the Trump Inc. podcast produced by Politico. And I'll take my answers off the
air. All right, Jessica, congressman.
Okay, we have not heard simply due to the fact that many members would like to add different issues to the impeachment inquiry. But that has been eliminated for the time being, simply due to the fact that this has been tough enough, you know, whether people realize or not, just to have the pressure that has been put on the leadership. I do not serve on the Judiciary Committee or the Intelligence Committee. And so I stay busy in financial services and agriculture. But at the same time, all of this is going on. And members have a tendency to talk to each other about all the other things that should be a part of it. But I doubt that they're going to be able to do that because this is tough enough.
Daryl is in St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thank you, Al. The Republicans seem to be losing the suburban vote throughout the country in the recent elections. I'm curious if you think that the suburban vote in Northeast Florida could go Democratic with so much of this, you know, nuttiness out of the Republican Party and Donald Trump. Is there any concerted effort to try and flip Northeast Florida? People say Florida is purple, but Northeast Florida and the governor and Tallahassee are always red. And it just seems like we have an opportunity here in Northeast Florida that could truly change the election, both for president and for the Senate.
Daryl, thanks. Your colleague John Rutherford does have a high-profile Democratic opponent. Donna Deegan is running against him. She's banking on the hope that, as the caller said, this area might be trending more purple. When you look at the numbers, though, his district is pretty Republican. So what do you think about that?
Well, you know, just recently we saw in Duval that Duval went blue with Andrew Gillum. You know, and so that really is a very telling type situation that things can really change. But what we do see in North Florida is that changes have been taking place among women voters, especially whether they're Republican women or Democratic women, as women are beginning to exercise their authority in the voting booth. And that's one of the things that happened why the president made it in is really on the women vote. And so as a result, more women are really backing out. Maybe 60% of them say they would not want to support the president again. And so as a result, I think there is going to be a change because members are going to have to appeal to women voters and women issues, which is so critically important. And so, you know, you have to really pay attention. We can... in North Florida, when I first ran in rural areas, women most of the time paid attention to their husband. As time went on, that changed. You know, husband now pay attention to a lot of what their women say they want to do. And so that's very important for the political system. Then you have this big group of independents in Florida. They're going to make a difference in the next election, even in this area. Independent women is going to drive this next election.
That will be an important voting block to watch. Let me get to a few emails and tweets now for Congressman Al Lawson. Matthew tweets the show, the president has the ability to withhold aid. That doesn't mean his intent makes it justifiable. For example, a member of Congress could nominate people to officer training school, but if they only give it to their friends, that's corrupt. Joe emails the show. Fiona Hill testified that Russia was not interested in preferring a candidate. It was interested in creating conflict. And if Ukraine is so important in our opposition to Russia, where was Obama in 2012 telling Medvedev, excuse my pronunciation, that he would have more flexibility in removing American defensive weapons? Obama only sent blankets to Ukraine. Okay, so that gives you an idea of the divide in the points of view out there. And then on Facebook, lots of people chiming in as we speak with Congressman Al Lawson. Janice writes, business wasn't getting done even before these hearings. She says, I'm tired of the lies Republicans are telling, even contradicting the U.S. intelligence agencies. Perry writes, with a 2-year term, House members are on a perpetual campaign and fundraising cycle. We need campaign finance reform. Okay, so as we talk about all of these issues, before we go back to the calls, Congressman, I know another issue you've been working on for this area is bringing a VA hospital to Jacksonville. Last week, Governor DeSantis had a groundbreaking ceremony for a VA clinic in St. Johns County. And so as we veer off impeachment for a moment, let me ask you, would that have any impact on your efforts to bring a VA hospital to Duval County? Or is that still moving ahead?
Well, we're still moving ahead simply due to the fact you have the highest number of veterans in the state in the Duval area. And it is a hassle for them to try to go to Gainesville or to Lake City or other places. And so, you know, it's a heavy lift, but, you know, we have to keep working on it to try to make sure we bring one here. There's no reason why it shouldn't be in the heart of where all your veterans are. Mm. And I think that, you know, I work on it all the time and with my colleagues, and many of them agree. It's just a matter, like, we have a new appropriation chair that's coming in now, and I've had that conversation with her. We had a vote on her last week. And so as a result, there's always opportunity, and I think this will be one of the greatest opportunities. My father was a disabled veteran, and I know how the travel was to Lake City, to Gainesville, all the time for many, many years, and so I can know what it means to people here who are having to do the same thing.
So you're hoping the appropriations chair will set aside funds to actually build something here,
right,
in the city.
Right. You know, they stopped earmarks under the Obama administration. So you really have to work in the committee. You can say, I'm going to bring this down, and bring this down, but it doesn't work like that anymore in Congress. You have to be able to work across party lines and also work in all the agencies to be able to get resources back in your community.
So it's on hold, I guess, until you get the money. That's where it is?
Absolutely.
Okay. Jay on the west side. Hi, Jay. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Howdy. This entire impeachment thing, it's some of the flimsiest evidence I've seen trying to remove a sitting president. We've got president of the Democrats already planning this well in advance up to the day he was inaugurated. The only thing I see here is the Democrats projecting everything they've already done onto this president. Joe Biden was caught admitting to a quid pro quo with the exact same country.
That's simply not true.
I wish it was true, but it wasn't.
He was on video admitting it.
There was no Joe Biden never agreed to a quid pro quo with Ukraine. That is not true. Sure.
Remove the attorney that's investigating my son's company or you're not getting the money.
No,
that's
Joe Biden wanted someone removed from office because he was trying to improve anti-corruption efforts in Ukraine. What you are saying is a false narrative.
That attorney was acquitted of corruption.
Jay, that's a false narrative. I'm sorry, but it's simply not true. And no, you're simply wrong on that. Now, that said, let me get to Jay's other point, which is that he hasn't seen enough evidence that has been brought forth so far to justify impeachment and removal of this president. And as you pointed out, Congressman, nearly half of Americans agree with Jay.
Yeah, that's true. We are, as members, we have been in all the security hearings by intelligence and the FBI. In those hearings, they point, I can't tell you everything, but they point very clearly what violations have taken place. Not only do Democrats hear them, Republican here. All of them have the opportunity in these hearings to go up and talk and ask questions. And there's never been some of the things that they talk about afterwards, say this didn't happen, what happened on this and so forth, that doesn't happen. But it is the political atmosphere that exists in Washington, D.C., you know, and it's really all about the next election sometime, then, and about what type situation do you put the American public in.
The thing that's so concerning is that Americans live in two completely different information universes right now. And many Americans don't know what to believe, or they only seek out information that conforms to their existing ideologies, even if it's not true. That's not good for democracy.
You're absolutely correct, Melissa. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why programs that you have and other people have that can give the best information you can for people to become aware of what is really going on is very important, because you reach so many people.
Well, let's get a few more on the air. Wendy is in holding there in St. Augustine. Wendy, go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. My question is, when the Navy SEAL was reinstated to get his pin, I wondered if Jay feels like the guy Jay that called in. I wonder if Jay and other people who believe in Donald Trump can still believe in him when the Navy SEALs themselves and the people who back the Navy SEALs took away this guy's pin because he did atrocities. And now President Trump thinks that's okay. And that disturbs me, and I wonder if it disturbs people like Jay who still think Trump is all right. And I also, for the congressman, I wonder, how do people who are Republicans back this guy when he does and says so many crazy
things? We got cut off there. Okay. Your response to Wendy.
Well, I think Wendy is absolutely correct. What the president did with the Navy SEAL is just, what kind of message do you send back to military personnel? It's really bad what he did. You know, it is un-American.
He had the right to do it, though.
He had the right to do it, but it's un-American because, you know, they are trained in the military not to do those kind of things, regardless of how bad it is and how much atrocities that you have over there. And so by the president doing that and then want to get rid of the naval officer, you know, it's just unbelievable. I mean, you just have never seen anything like that before.
Ron is downtown. One more call. It's Ron. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Hello, just trying to sort of understand that, similar to what, you know, some you're saying, really, I think, how do we bridge this gap? It's amazing to me, you know, in this political climate, just talking to other people and trying to have, you know, a decent conversation, even, you know, what one person considers facts, just like you were speaking to the caller, even telling somebody what a fact or that something isn't correct, they sort of blame you for, you know, the whole quote of false media. That's sort of taken over the country. We can't even have decent conversations now. And I'm trying to figure out how to get over that, you know, when you have somebody who, regardless of what you say, just isn't going to believe a word out of your mouth. How can we move forward?
I mean, I know, Ron. I completely take your point, and especially right before Thanksgiving, Al Lawson. How on earth are families going to sit down together this weekend when we are so divided? And what can we do about it?
Well, you know, Melissa, this is a time for giving and families coming together. And by the way, I wish everyone out there a very great and happy Thanksgiving. The caller, it is very difficult. Normally, a situation like this occur as you get close to a national election. You have a number of Democrats who are running, beginning to attack each other, you know. Right now, you have one or two Republicans say, "I might run," you know. You have Republican governors are saying, you know, it's wrong what the president is doing, but he is appealing to his base. And so as a result, people have a tendency to believe whatever they want to. Now, what is important that we need to do, I think one of the reasons why the Republicans feel good about some issues is because the economy is doing well. And when the economy is doing well, they equate the economy to whoever is serving and say the president is actually serving. But you got to look at a lot of these issues that affect ordinary people, you know, wages, you know, job opportunities, health care, lowering prescription drugs. Those are things that are very important to everyone, you know, and those are the issues that all of us should be concerned about and say we got to get something done.
Well, we hope you guys can get something done in the new year. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And we thank you, Congressman Al Lawson, for stopping by Studio 5. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
A quick break. And up next, Florida author Sonia Mongar remembers the AIDS epidemic here in Jacksonville. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Ira Glass. Every year near Thanksgiving, This American Life brings you our annual program about poultry.
You ready for a bird?
Chickens, ducks, turkeys.
That's the day we had before the night 3,000 turkeys died.
Real and fictional.
Chicken!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
This week, the tradition continues.
Why would you do that?
Saturday at 1 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Eat that chicken!
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, World AIDS Day is coming up this Sunday. Right now, we want to focus on an AIDS story. Florida author Sonia Mongar just won the Royal Palm Literary Award from the Florida Writers Association. It's for her new novel, Two Spoons of Bitter, a story that looks back at the AIDS epidemic here in Jacksonville. Sonia Mongar, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
So this book is a novel, but it's based on a true story that you witnessed at the height of the AIDS crisis in Jacksonville in the early 1990s when you worked at an alcohol and drug rehab service. What's the story all about?
Partly. Well, it's based on being immersed in the era and working in prevention. Mm-hmm. And also doing services for people living with AIDS at some point. But I worked at the University of North Florida for 4 years doing alcohol, drug, and AIDS prevention education. And it's not that I was, you know, that was part of, you know, I wasn't part of a movement to battle AIDS or anything like that, because it was kind of a new thing that came into the, through a grant. And I was pretty naive, and when I graduated, I went and got a job at a rehab doing services for people living with AIDS, and I was witness to a lot of the hysteria that was happening in the city at the time, the apathy, the complacency, and the abuse of the AIDS people who were infected with AIDS.
You're right. People with the disease were right. Basically shunned.
Yes.
And not able to get treatment.
Right.
In many cases.
Right. It was difficult, and it kind of went contrary to the, you know, treatment, alcohol and drug treatment, because part of the solution was to try to provide clean needles and condoms and things like that. And that kind of went counter to, you know, recovery. So there was a lot of resistance in that aspect too. So me being pretty naive, coming into that setting and then seeing all these things happening, I started keeping a diary of it just to kind of deal with my feelings. And I was writing for Folio at the time. And I thought, oh, I'll just do a journalistic type expose, you know, mm-hmm. of all of the, you know, things that I witnessed. And so I tried to write it as a memoir, and I actually used it as a portfolio to get into UCF to do a master's in creative nonfiction. And so the whole idea was to turn this into a memoir kind of thing. And that was 20 years ago. So what ended up happening is I wasn't able to do that as a memoir, because being the protagonist in your own story is really difficult. So I started dabbling in fiction about 4 years ago and thinking, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I should shift this because this is a story I have to tell.
So what's the story?
The story is a young 21-year-old art therapist who grows up in Minnesota in a cold podunk town, railroad town, with her grandmother, who's an alcoholic. Wants to get away, and she can't wait to get to from the dark, cold Minnesota winters and things like that. And she dreams about going to Florida, so she gets a job in a rehab. So doing as an art therapist, she's an art therapist. And she comes as a naive woman, even though she's been trained and everything in art therapy and addiction and things like that. She comes to Florida and finds, you know, all of the things that moral and ethical dilemmas that you have to face with racism, institutionalized, mm-hmm. you know, sexism, homophobia, all those types of things that were going
on. And how that affected AIDS patients.
Right.
So now here we are 25 years on.
Right.
AIDS is no longer a death sentence. Yeah. You can live with HIV, but reducing the stigma and barriers to care, those are still big issues as we come up on World AIDS Day this Sunday, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know what exactly is happening here, but I did listen to one of your broadcasts about that. And apparently Jacksonville, surprisingly, is still in the top.
We are one of the top cities for rates of infection right. in America.
Right.
It's true.
Right.
It's still a crisis.
Yes.
And so your book is so timely, even though it's from experiences that happened over two decades ago.
Right. It's timely. It's happening now still.
Yeah, it's ongoing.
Right.
So as I mentioned, Two Spoons of Bitter is an award-winning book. Author Sonia Mongar just won the Royal Palm Literary Award from the Florida Writers Association. And when you pick up this novel, you step back in time to the early 1990s and you visit Blanchard, a fictional Florida metropolis that somehow seems a lot like Jacksonville.
Blanchard.
Blanchard, like Bayard.
Yeah.
Now you can pick up this book at Chamblin's online, and it's really an important tale. Again, as we mark World AIDS Day this Sunday. So kudos on all of the success. And thanks so much for joining us.
Okay. Yeah. And I want to say one more thing. It's not just about that. it's about coming to terms with family secrets and things like that. So it has a bigger implication. So
it's called Two Spoons of Bitter. And she's author Sonia Mongar. A quick break, and in a moment, the cult classic Mystery Science Theater 3000 comes to town. How you can win some tickets. That's next.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now.
The percentage of young people working in this economy is down since the year 2000. Teenage girls in particular, for some age-old reasons.
You're expected to do certain things, you know, look out after your siblings, help with their homework, mopping, cleaning, just doing chores around the house.
I'm Kai Rizdal, the unpaid labor of teenage girls, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In her widely adapted Thanksgiving play, playwright Larissa Fasthorse takes on some of the myths we tell ourselves about Thanksgiving, including the messages behind some of the songs we teach our kids.
So really what we're doing with a simple, fun little song is we're taking the toddlers of today and making them the appropriators of tomorrow.
That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Glenn Simpson and Peter Fritsch, founders of the private research company Fusion GPS. During the 2016 campaign, they raised some of the early warnings about ties between Trump and Russia. They worked with former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele, who wrote the Steele dossier. Simpson and Fritsch have a new book. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
It may be the movie America needs right now.
In Fred Rogers' neighborhood, there's no them. It's just us.
Kindness and compassion can seem in short supply nowadays. Does Tom Hanks deliver in a role he admits was terrifying? For Thanksgiving, the Movie Club reviews A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's your chance to join Mystery Science Theater 3000 creator and original host Joel Hodgson on his final tour. Yeah, Hodgson is out with an all-new live show featuring his movie-riffing robots, Tom Servo, Crow, and Gypsy, performing on stage the unique comedy the beloved show is known for. Hodgson appears with the puppets and the robots, I should say, at the Florida Theater this Sunday night. Now, in a moment, we'll tell you how you can score some tickets in our giveaway. But first, I spoke with Hodgson about his creation and why MST3K continues to draw the loyalty of legions of fans.
Well, Joel, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah.
You know, it's exciting for all of your many fans that you are coming here to the Florida Theater. You're the creator of the show. You've been involved with it in some way for more than, 30 years. When you look back on that long span of time, did you always anticipate this level of success, or has it been a surprise to you?
I have to say I'm very grateful to start with, and I'm kind of amazed and astonished that it's still, I get to talk about it after 30 years. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm surprised and happy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, not that many shows last that long. You've got to be one of the longest in history, I would think.
Well, we've produced more content than most shows in history, just because our shows are 90 minutes long and we've made over 200 of them. So, yeah, that's true.
Now, why do you think the formula you've hit upon is so beloved? What is it about this show that people have just stuck with for so long?
Oh, boy. I think the premise is kind of watching these cheesy movies with companions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're really kind of companions, and we behave like companions, not jerks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of it. We work really hard to be funny, but not negative. So I think that's part of it. If you can do that. I mean, listen, there's cynicism, lots of it in our show, but somehow we try to balance that, I guess.
Something you just liked doing personally, watching bad, cheesy movies, and that's how you got the idea to create the show?
Yeah, I mean, I was like a TV junkie when I was a little kid, and I watched movies all the time, and I liked science fiction and fantasy movies, and I couldn't tell the difference between a good movie and a bad movie for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And then I think when cable and video stores and all that happened, there became this abundance, and then there became this place of this time of people evaluating good and bad movies, and so we were kind of there at the right time, kind of dancing with these weird movies and talking about them, you know.
Now, this is your last tour. Why is that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm 59 years old, you know. I'm an old guy on the road. So I think it's just it's kind of like my last chance to say goodbye to people or say hello to them. And I'm going to still work with the brand. And, you know, we're still, like, fortunately, our show is based on Rotten Tomatoes. We're the third highest rated show on Netflix. And so
that's really extraordinary. That's tough to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. And so we're just super lucky. And so regardless of if it stays at Netflix or goes somewhere else, we want to keep making the shows, and I'll be involved with that for a while. But this was the beginning of me saying, oh, I'm handing over some of my responsibilities to other people next tour. So we'll probably have another tour going out in the next year or so. And I won't be on it, but I'll be involved with it. But I'm just not going out. Too much wear and tear on my old body.
Hey, I know what you're talking about. Kudos to you for what an incredible run. And it's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting that Mystery Science Theater 3000 is coming to Jacksonville. Creator Joel Hodgson, it's such a pleasure to speak with you. Have fun, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
All right, cheers. I'll see you. Bye.
Okay, email us right now if you want a pair of tickets to see Joel Hodgson Sunday night at the Florida Theater. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will pick one winner at random. Get to it, MST3K fans. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is digital editor. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. And make sure to tune in tomorrow as we have a look ahead to Small Business Saturday. And we unveil our first ever local holiday gift guide. Yay! That's coming up tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.